to the lightning round.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello, and welcome to the Dave Kirshner Lightning Round, episode 21. I am your host, Dave Kirshner. It is week 36 of the shit show known as the 46 Quadrennial Hunger Games. Let's get to it. Tell you, you know, I was, first off, I have to apologize. So, I thought I had a bunch of episodes recorded and stored, and that the episodes that I had recorded and stored also included last week. So, I went in to go get ready to start doing this week's episode, and I was like, hey, what happened to the episode from the 24th, the week of the 24th, and then I was like, ah, crap, I totally forgot, I didn't do it, I had created the folder for all of the files and stuff, but I'm sorry, so now I got 2 weeks worth of fodder from bumbling, stumbling Biden to review, bring you up to speed on, or something. You are out in the world. You know that this jackassery cannot go on much longer. Because it is just, you can't make it up. That at every single step this guy makes, he steps on a landmine. Every single time. And I don't even think it's him. Maybe he's got input. I don't know, but you know, if you look at the agenda and the things that the left is pushing with this presidency, with a majority in the House and a one-vote majority in the Senate, if you include Comrade Kamala and her vote for a 50-50 tie, the things that they're pushing, it's like Bernie Sanders wrote a book and all of his economic crap. Because it really is shocking to me, because it really looks like not one single Democrat has ever taken an econ class. Not in high school, not in college. And I would not be surprised if you told me that none of them knew how to balance a checkbook. Because I wouldn't trust these guys with a butter knife. I don't trust these guys to even load a dishwasher. They don't know how to do shit. And it is so infuriating that that's why I can only do one episode a week. Okay? It's because of these idiots, these buffoons, and their agenda that it just is beyond the pale. All right? So, yeah, Trump got stuck in his last year in office because of coronavirus, in which there was no coincidence between the unleashing of the coronavirus by China during Trump's last year and the lead up to the biggest election in this country's history. There's no coincidence to that. Oh, John Durham, he came out with some information. Turns out, and he arrested somebody. Somebody's been charged. It's shocking that somebody actually could we get punished for this Russia bullshit that we had to listen to for 4 years. Russia, Russia, Russia. Trump is a Russian asset. He's Putin's puppet. It was all bullshit. And Durham is finally unleashing some of his knowledge from his investigation, and people are starting to get charged. And then I saw it was I think he was an English comedian. And he's no fan to the right, but he is calling balls and strikes, which is refreshing for somebody that's on the left. And said, wait, you guys lied to us for the last 3 or 4 years? And now you want us to believe you when you're talking COVID numbers and believe you when you talk about the vaccine? And you want us to say it's okay that Big Pharma is not liable for any side effects from the vaccine, but you're going to force us to take it? You know, it was that one that just really made me laugh. But, anyway, John Durham's finally getting to the bottom of some of this Russia conspiracy crap. But, it shocks me how bad the agenda is that Biden is putting out there. And I've said it before, they're only doing this, they're doing as much as they possibly can in terms of policy and agenda-driven decisions, because they know people were so fired up and pissed off after the 2020 election that they stole and installed this dipshit, that there was no chance in hell they were going to win another election in the next 2 to 4 and possibly 6 years. They were not going to get any blue wave of jackassery anywhere in any shape, in any form, because we know they cheated. We caught them cheating. But for the love of God, I don't know why people are talking that this guy won the election. He didn't. And the Arizona results prove he didn't win it. They should have certified those results. They found 50,000+ illegal votes in one county in Arizona. One county. 50,000 illegal votes. If that doesn't make you say this was bullshit, this was illegitimate, he is not the fucking president. Oh, I dropped an F-bomb. I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that. He's not the president. He's not. I refuse to accept him as president. And oh, you'll love this. The original communist, the original socialist, whatever ism you want to assign to him, Barry Obama, he actually came out and said that the immigration wave of open borders that they're currently employing is not sustainable. Here's the problem, Barry. You started this mess. People started flocking to the border when you were president because you were going to somehow magically get open borders and amnesty for the Dreamers and all this stuff, and it didn't work. Because we had enough people in the House and Senate to tell you to go pound sand. Now, you've got bumbling, stumbling Biden in there, and he threw the damn gates open. I want to know how the hell all these people got off of Haiti and made their way through Central and South America, all the way to our border. How the hell do you get 10 to 20,000 Haitian immigrants knocking on our door at the border? Who put them into Latin America? How'd they get there? And how? It's an island nation. To get to Del Rio, Texas is like 3,000 miles. How'd they get there? They had to cross the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico to get over to, say, I think they're saying they came in through Panama. And then these guys walked or hitched rides from Panama up through all those other countries into Mexico to get to the border. Who's helping these people? Because they're the ones that are to blame. And they, you know, when the first wave showed up, they were all wearing Biden shirts. Biden, let me in. You can't make this up. There's photographic evidence. The guy's chasing people on horseback and his reins fly out of his hand as he reaches down to grab this little illegal fence jumper, And because of the way that the reins were flying through the air when the photographer took the picture, it looked like he was whipping him. And then everybody went batshit crazy. Oh, they're beating the poor immigrants. They're whipping them with their reins. And no. No, they weren't. No, they aren't. And even, I think it was the New York Times, even they had to backtrack their story. And they're like, well, you know, maybe we exaggerated. You think? Possibly. And here's the thing that really pisses me off. And it should really piss you off. They are literally taking plane loads of these unvaccinated people carrying all different manner of communicable disease. That's a true statement. They've been testing them. They're carrying all kinds of shit. They put them up on planes. They put them in buses. And they are trucking these people all over the country. They are importing Democrat votes at your expense. Because they know that their shit show cannot pass muster at the 2022 election, the 2024 presidential election, or 2026. They can't. So they're importing votes because they know they can't cheat in the same manner that they did in 2020 again. They got caught. Everybody knows they got caught. But 50.1% wanted Biden, which is bullshit. Oh, he won by 40,000 votes. No, he didn't. I already found 50,000 illegal ones. And they're saying, oh, well, that just increased Joe's vote tally in Arizona. Really? Are you sure? Let's take a deeper dive into that. I'm not going to do that for you right now, but they have already done that deep dive into the analytics of the Arizona vote recount. And it is shocking and eye-opening the lengths that the DNC, liberals, leftists, whatever you want to call them, it is shocking. And it was all because the anointed one, Hillary Clinton, didn't get elected. You know why she didn't get elected? Because she is possibly the most unlikable politician in the history of United States politics. That's why she didn't get elected. America did not care that she had a server. America did not care that she had four phones. America did not care that they destroyed evidence to try and get away with their crimes. Americans generally don't care about that kind of shit. What they do care about is character. And she had none of it. That's why she didn't get elected. And that's why every time she's on trying to virtue signal, I just laugh. I'm like, whatever. Why don't you go for another walk in those Maine woods with your bottle of Chardonnay, you kook? Get out of here. Anyway, I got off topic. So, what I was saying was, Trump got stuck, okay? Because of the coronavirus, they wind up having to do little stimulus bills and multi-trillion dollar deals here. And I wasn't a fan. I don't like it. Government spends too much money as it is. I understand why they did it. I get it. Now that the spend happy Democrats are in charge, they are going whole hog to try and get everything that they can. And it's clear that they've never taken an econ class, an economics class, because you have the press secretary, Jen Tzatziki Sauce Pazaki, literally saying it's unfair and absurd for businesses to raise prices if the Biden administration raises corporate taxes. Yeah, because businesses are in the habit of just sucking up all those taxes, Jen. They've literally never taught that in any economics class. Of course they're going to pass it on. What a pack of idiots. Jen Tzatziki's house strikes again! Anywho, the Republicans have taken a look at this bill. or I shouldn't say bill, it's a spending package. And the Democrats want to spend $3.5 trillion. And every single Republican and one Democrat, Joe Manchin in West Virginia. I don't understand how West Virginia elects a Democrat, to be honest with you. Because every time there's a Democrat in office, they try and screw over West Virginia and Western Pennsylvania, coal country. Why do you people keep voting for Democrats? You've got to be smarter than that. The people that are literally trying to kill your livelihood, you keep sending to Washington. Knock it off! Anyway, so as part of this $3.5 trillion shitstorm that they want to try and do, the spending bill includes many social initiatives championed by progressives, including an extension of monthly child tax credit payments, universal pre-K, along with just say indoctrination school, free college tuition, paid family leave, and expanded child care. Biden and the progressive backers say the slate will create a more inclusive economy that will provide new opportunities for low and middle income families. What? That is not how economics works! Under the plan, a grant program would make free community college available regardless of people's basis of citizenship, alienage, or immigration status. Medicare would add dental, hearing, and vision benefits to its coverage, and the government would shell out $200 billion to establish universal pre-K for kids 3 and 4 years of age. All right, so here's the problem. Nobody said shit about college tuition and student loans when I was going to school and long after. This only became a problem when the federal government got involved in student loans. The minute they took up that mantle, every single college and university in this country, even from a junior college all the way up to grad school, medical school, everything in between. As soon as the government started handling student loans, they raised every single tuition for every single school, and they've raised the tuition every single year. I can't tell you, you would be shocked. My daughter's college, and we're not paying the full nut here, because she's got a 4.0 and she's an athlete, so they threw a shit ton of money at her. But if you had just gotten into the school and did not receive any kind of benefits package, financial package, her college is $65,000 a year. And that's not even the most expensive school in the state. There's another one called Kenyon. Kenyon is the most expensive school I'm hearing in the country. It's upwards of $75,000 to $80,000. I have yet to meet a single graduate from Kenyon. And if I'm doing interviews for my company, oh, I got to get back to that. I got to tell you about that one. What a shitstorm that one is. But anyway, if I'm doing interviews, I don't care what school you went to. I'm going to rely on HR to verify that you actually have a college degree. The school that issued it, I don't give two shits about. Don't care. In fact, if I see somebody that comes in from Harvard or Yale or some Ivy League school, I don't know if I even want to hire them. I'd rather hire the kid that took 8 years to get through because he had to work full time. It's the background, it's the work ethic. That's what I'm after. I don't care how much money your parents paid for school. That's the God's honest truth. Anyway, about the company. I've said before, it's a global French-Canadian IT firm, 70-plus thousand employees worldwide. And earlier this week, we got the email. we must declare our vaccination status by Friday, October 1st. I have sent an email requesting the purpose behind that, as the mandate is still being settled as to whether or not it's legal. If OSHA is the one that's supposed to be mandating this stuff, or what? I don't know. I'm about ready to declare conscientious objector status. That's what I think it is. Just, like, wait, what? Somebody, it's just an idea. They just kind of threw it out there. There's not actually a law. It's not actually a mandate. We don't actually have to comply with this. Why is the company forcing me to disclose private healthcare information? I'll tell you why. It was in the part where I introduced the company. If you can see my fingers, they're flashing air quotes. Canadian! They're Canadian! And they do an assload of business with the United States federal government and numerous state governments. So, because the federal government's being run by socialists, and some of the state governments are too, the company's more than happy to comply. But if I'm at home, and I'm not going to the office, and I'm not traveling to my client site in another state, I shouldn't have to declare my vaccination status if I'm sitting in my office in Ohio. My home office. Let me clarify. My home office. It's ridiculous. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. Anyway, Joe Manchin, Senator Joe Manchin, has met with the Biden administration, the installed Biden administration, because they weren't elected. My wife doesn't even want to talk politics with me anymore because I just correct her. She's like, will you stop that? He's the president. No, he's not. He's a Manchurian candidate is what he is. He's not the president. But Joe Manchin from West Virginia said on Wednesday that he would not support spending trillions more on social programs, highlighting an ongoing dispute between the moderate Democrat and the party leaders. That every time they say the party leaders, it might as well be communist China or old Politburo Russia. Party leaders. It's because they are. I just thought it was apropos, but every time I see it, it makes me laugh. But because he's not willing to support it, it threatens to derail negotiations on Biden's $3.5 trillion spending bill. In a lengthy statement on the negotiations, Manchin said that he has made it very clear to the installed president and the party leaders that it would be the very definition of fiscal insanity to greenlight more spending despite funding shortages for Social Security and Medicare. Manchin also cited concerns about the potential impact to inflation and the shaky U.S. economic recovery. A Democrat acknowledged inflation and shaky economic recovery when there's another Democrat in the White House? Ooh! Oh my God, I can't believe it! He just said the inflation word! The left, which is demanding that Congress pass a full $3.5 trillion spending bill, was having none of it. Quote, progressives won't back down on delivering paid leave, education, health care, child care, and climate action because of an arbitrary deadline, said Democratic Rep. Pramila Jayapal of Washington State. We're sticking to our deal and delivering for the people. Wow, that's a truckload of crap. But, as can be expected, Did you wait for it? Wait for it. The little Twitter Nazis came out. You little keyboard warriors, you! They came out and just unleashed hell on Joe Manchin because he won't support and Kristen Sinema over in Arizona. There's two Democrats, actually, I guess. So it would be 48-52, and Kamala can stay. Comrade Kamala can stay. What did I call her? Kamala? Comrade Kamala can stay wherever the hell they've got her cordoned off. But all the little Twitter Nazis came out, and they just unleashed holy hell on him. Joe Manchin is really getting on my nerves. Tell us your number on the budget bill, Joe. Stop grandstanding for attention. That was from... what's his name? Sulu? On Star Trek, George Takei? Well, okay, George. transgender activist Charlotte Clymer says, Joe Manchin is openly unprincipled beyond adhering to whatever benefits Joe Manchin. None of this is surprising. Wow. Joe Manchin puts the country ahead of his own needs, says, look, we can't spend all this money. We don't have the money. We're broke. We got a debt ceiling problem. And the head of the Federal Reserve says we're going to default and run out of money on October 1st. But by all means, let's go spend $3.5 trillion. Somebody else said, why doesn't Manchin just declare himself a Republican? Another one said, you are not doing your job. You are to protect and serve your constituents. You are pathetic. Joe Manchin is personally destroying President Biden's legislative agenda. I hope Manchin's lobbyist friends are happy. I hope this guy loses everything. Yes, his seat, but also his funding, his staff, his briefcase, his GD parking spot. Take it all. He doesn't deserve a platform. Wow. So there's our little Twitter Nazis advocating for cancel culture. We don't like what you said, so you don't get to say anything anymore, and I'm going to take your job, and the bank, I'm going to try and get them to foreclose on your house, and they're going to close your bank accounts. That's cancel culture. That's what that looks like, folks. And now, funny thing, celebs are coming out and saying, yeah, this cancel culture thing's bullshit. It's not benefiting anybody, so knock it off. It's funny. But, you know. Oh, to go back to the vax mandates and the disclosure of personal health information. I was listening to Kirk from Turning Point USA. What's his name? Something Kirk. Anyway, Charlie Kirk. And he was saying, you know what's going to be interesting is Democrats spent a whole year, the whole last year of Trump's first term as president. See how I slid that in there? Pretty sly. Derailing and denouncing and dropping credibility issues on the idea that a vaccine would be ready by the end of 2020. And then they all came out, and as the vaccine got closer and closer to fruition, they were like, oh, well, I'm not going to take it. That's Trump's vaccine. It hasn't been proven yet. It's got to go through 18 layers of testing with the FDA to be approved as a vaccine. That could take years. He's rushing it. He's rushing the vaccine. It can't be trusted. I'm not taking it. It's Trump's. Well, they stole the election. They installed that idiot. And suddenly, they're surprised when people don't want to take it. Really? Like you didn't see this coming? Of course they didn't see it coming. Because they're too busy screaming at the clouds, telling you should give them more money to combat climate change. They're telling you, stop flying on those airplanes. Stop driving those cars. Stop taking those cruises. We have to save the planet. There is no planet B. Meanwhile, They're jetting off to Mexico on their private jet. They're jetting back and forth across the country to get from Washington to California to go visit their constituents, which is a total lie. But by all means, we should be walking everywhere. And we should go slaughter all the cows because they fart too much. This is the world that they have created. And they're surprised when they don't want to take the vaccine. Now here's the part that Charlie Kirk was getting at. What happens when the NBA season starts? Because the black population in the United States, and the black and brown, whatever you want to call them, they don't want anything to do with the vaccine. I think their rates of vaccination is around 20 to 25%, somewhere in there, I think. Maybe up to 30, maybe. But it's not much higher. And then the NBA season is going to start. And I think somebody said 60 to 70% of the players are not vaccinated. And they refuse to get vaccinated. So now, you've got a Democrat White House, and they're mandating vaccines. You got people being assaulted in New York City because New York City went batshit crazy with vax passports and vax mandates. And people said, I'm not telling you shit. I just want to go in and eat. And then people said, no, you can't come in. You have to prove you've been vaccinated. But here's the problem. Even if you prove you got vaccinated, you can still get COVID. Because it's not a vaccine. It's a flu shot. You're at 95, 96, 97%. Guess what? Condoms are 97% effective. Would you trust a Democrat with a condom? I wouldn't trust him with a butter knife. Nope, not gonna do it. So, little Twitter Nazis, the keyboard warriors, they came out and they attacked Joe Manchin. But I'll tell you what, when that NBA season starts and those players say, I'm not taking the vaccine, and then you're missing some of the biggest stars in the NBA because they won't take the shot, you're going to see people lose their friggin' minds if the NBA season is affected and altered in any way. Seriously, it's not going to be pretty. But anyway, I found an article here. It says, four of the most ridiculous items hidden inside Biden's $3.5 trillion budget that you probably haven't seen. It's on the Western Journal. It's written by C. Douglas Golden. It says, if the Democrats in Washington, D.C. have their way, Senator Rand Paul is going to be busy man this holiday season. The Kentucky Republican is famous for his Festivus report every December, in which the spending hawk airs his grievances regarding the most ridiculous items the federal government spent money on that year. Last year's report included lizards on treadmills, studies on whether hot tubs lower stress, and yacht subsidies. I can only guess who earmarked those items for the budget, but and then he continued, unfortunately this year will find us with a Democrat president as well as Democrat majorities in both the House and Senate. We've already burned through trillions in spending, and if moderate Democrats don't derail it, we're about to sign a $3.5 trillion via this year's bloated budget. And believe me, there are some whopping grievances in there that need to be aired, at least if this bill passes in its current form. It'd be difficult to go through all the waste in the budget, paste each sheet of paper from one of the 2,465-page bill, throw a dart at it, and you're likely to find one that is just full of government profligacy. Number one of the four is tree equity. That's what he titled it. Tree equity, $3 billion. Equity is every liberal's favorite word these days. It's a way of saying equality of outcome. Yeah, that's the thing. That's what they're shooting for. They're shooting for equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity, which is what you're supposed to do. You pass and fail, you succeed or fail on your own, but you were given the opportunity just like everybody else. That's what life is supposed to be, not equality of outcome. That's just total BS. Any spending item with the term attached should raise a red flag, particularly if it involves trees. According to Fox Business, the Agriculture Committee earmarked $3 billion to plant trees, but not just anywhere. Instead, the program promises a priority for projects that increase tree equity. The term tree equity isn't defined in the bill because, of course, it isn't. The term isn't defined in the bill because, of course, it isn't. However, Fox Business noted the definition from conservation group American Forests, which says the concept identifies the cities that can gain the most significant health, economic, and climate benefits by increasing tree canopy in places of high need. Okay. Number two, bias training in healthcare. There's $25 million. While not necessarily up there with tree equity in terms of the amount of money spent, the $25 million for anti-discrimination and bias training in healthcare is another sign of how misplaced the bill's priorities are. According to the New York Post, the budget calls for the Treasury to give the money to nonprofits in order to develop, disseminate, review, research, and evaluate training for health professionals and all staff who interact with patients to reduce discrimination and bias in the provision of healthcare, with a focus on maternal healthcare. Wait, maternal? Maternity sounds like a loaded concept when it comes to gender. After all, not all mothers are women, according to the left. Shouldn't it have been a focus on healthcare for birthing persons? Check your privilege. He actually wrote that. That's funny. Maybe you can cut off another $25 million to spend on bias training for members of the House of Representatives, because you clearly need it. Number three, high-performance green buildings, $1 billion. So a high-performance green building is a building designed to reduce energy consumption. The General Services Administration is getting $1 billion to convert its facilities to this standard. It will reportedly take 10 years. Okay. Tax enforcement, $78.94 billion. See, that's where Barry Obama got into trouble, because he unleashed the IRS. He knew that he was about to lose after one term. The Republicans were raking into money. They were fundraising. The Tea Party movement was full bore, baby. And he knew it. He knew his ass was on the line. And he unleashed Lois Lerner and the IRS to try and take away Republican funding by denying them the 503C, 501, I don't know, the tax-exempt status. Barry cheated his ass off to get a second term. The Democrats wanted Hillary in the White House after Barry. They didn't cheat in 2020. They tried a smear campaign. Didn't work. She lost. Lost her ass. Trump gets in the White House. Democrats go right back to the same playbook and cheat their ass off. Seems to be a common theme, don't you think? Anyway, tax enforcement. Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda is supposed to cost $0. So how is he going to do this? Not only does it involve raising taxes, it involves giving the IRS $78 billion to shake American taxpayers down. According to Fox Business, among the most controversial outlays would be the nearly $80 billion the IRS would receive for tax enforcement, because what every American said was that they needed an IRS to be more aggressive. Unbelievable. Well, all right, Biden's an idiot. They installed an idiot. His policies are ruining the country. He swung open the doors at the border. He's trying to get vax mandates out there. He's trying to support vax passports. The NBA season's going to be a real interesting deal. But some other things are interesting. So the airline industry, they got a ton of people, hundreds of people that work for United are saying they're not going to take it. They're not going to get shot. So they're likely to be terminated. So now you've got an airline that, what, are these the engine mechanics? I kind of want them employed. Don't be flying on United if that shit happens. But it's happening all over the country. Not just my employer, but it's this kind of shit. But then, the one that, the piece de resistance, is this, in New York, the lady who took over for Cuomo after he resigned, says that she is ready to declare a state of emergency to ensure that they have enough vaccinated workers, so she's going to bring in the National Guard. Really? The National Guard, so you want to call in at that point? How about not firing or furloughing your healthcare workers who don't want to get the shot? How about that? What? It's just a pack of freaking idiots. Anyway, Biden put up another candidate to be nominated for BLM. Not Black Lives Matter. Bureau of Land Management. And apparently they didn't vet her enough, or they thought, well, we can just go ahead and just gloss over that. She's a criminal. She literally is a criminal. So she went out and spiked a whole bunch of trees in Idaho. This was in the 80s or 90s, something like that. Let me double check. Well, I was close, 1989. So she and a bunch of her little eco-terrorists went out and spiked a bunch of trees in the post office timber sale over in Idaho. So then she wrote a letter basically bragging about it and said, yeah, we did it because trees are essential or whatever the hell she said. But then one of the little eco-terrorist girlfriends flipped and started naming names. And sure enough, this Tracy Stone Manning was one of the people that she named. Not kidding. So when she got a letter saying that she was going to be charged, or that she was being identified and then possibly being charged, she went and got a lawyer. And then she negotiated a deal with the federal prosecutor and received immunity for her testimony when she turned on her friends. A little eco-terrorist, you. But because she cut a deal doesn't mean that she didn't break the law. She has knowingly and willingly done so. And this is the person that Biden puts up to be the head of the Bureau of Land Management. Another person who's perfectly comfortable with flirting and skirting federal law. Brilliant! Brilliant! All right, well, that's enough of the Biden administration, a bunch of jack-offs. I thought I would do something a little bit different than just giving you a regular old commercial. But what I would tell you is that parts four and or one through four of my five-part fictional series are on audio, audio book, or an audio file. You can get it wherever you get your audio books. Anyway, I thought I might as well just give you guys a sample, because that could be fun. That way you don't have to listen to me drone on, and then you get some information on the book. So the part that I'm going to play for you is from part one of the book series. It's where my two main characters meet each other for the first time. So I'm going to do that, and then I'll come back after that.
Part 1, Chapter 8. Josh stood and stared. Transfixed on the glow in the distance, he was reminded of the images of his youth and during his time in the Marine Corps, the burning Iraqi and Kuwaiti oil fields during the first Gulf War, the news footage he'd seen as a kid of the Chicago fires, and the L.A. riots when looters had burned blocks of the city to the ground. Those were just pictures in his school texts and on TV. But this was right outside his house, on his front porch. As Josh gawked in disbelief, contemplating whether or not he wanted to pop up on the grid by making a phone call to a federal agency, he saw the distinct shape of a canopy opening. My God! Someone actually jumped from that thing. Josh raced to the barn to start up the rhino. The animals, already spooked and stirring due to the flyby, were unfazed by the firing of the ATV farm vehicle. This was a familiar sound to them. He pulled the rhino out of the barn and began heading across the fields in the direction of the parachute. Surprisingly, the rhino handled remarkably well in the deep snow. He rarely took his eyes off the descending pillow of silk. Fortunately, he looked down enough times to keep from running into the overflow of implements from the barn, strewn about the farm from the fall harvest. The fresh blanket of snow made the identification of some of the tools difficult to discern. He was so focused on maintaining visual contact with the descending parachute that he nearly rolled the side-by-side machine over in a drainage gully. The pillow of silk eventually made its way into the thick hedgerow dividing the property. This only served to complicate the search for the survivor. "Damn," Josh muttered. As he scanned the area, he began thinking about where they could be. They could be hung up in a tree, or down in the ravine and lying in the creek bed. Josh flipped on the assortment of lights attached to the rhino, and after several long minutes of searching, he finally found what he was looking for. The parachute was caught about 20 feet up in a dormant oak, with the survivor hanging only a scant few feet off the ground. Blood was beginning to dry on their left arm. Josh took one look at the hanging body and thought, "This guy's in danger of exposure. I need to get them back to the cabin." Josh pulled the rhino up to the swinging jumper and surveyed the area. As he dismounted, he pulled a knife from its sheath so he could cut the harness free. As the knife came into full view, the survivor kicked out with both legs and struck Josh in his chest. Josh rolled backwards from the blow, but managed to use the momentum of the roll to carrying himself back onto his feet. With the plume of snow wafting back to the ground around him, Josh growled, "Not very smart, buddy. I'm holding a knife, and you're stuck in your chute, 5 feet off the ground. Now calm down. I'm not here to hurt you, okay?" Without looking up, the dangling stranger reached up and pulled the quick-release latches attached to each strap. They tumbled to the ground in a heap and screamed out in pain as they hit the frozen earth. Josh stood there dumbfounded. A woman?
All right, well, that was a snippet of part one. I enjoyed the narrator. Some people have said he sounds too folksy or something, but I enjoyed him. So he's working on... He moved, ironically. He moved out of Canada back to the States. So he's in the process of getting his recording studio back up and running. So that should be pretty soon now. And... he'll start recording part five, which would be the penultimate conclusion of the story. So I'm looking forward to that. And you know, I really wish I didn't have to spend so much time on Biden and his jackassery. I really do. I said it before, every single step they take, they step on a landmine. They take a situation that didn't need to be touched or addressed, and it was working just fine, and they feel some sort of compulsory, primordial need to go mess with it because it was working, but it was working because Trump fixed it. So, in their zeal to go undo anything that Trump did over 4 years, they are creating chaos and havoc everywhere they go with every step they take. So, I'm hoping I can get Scott back. He's been pretty busy. So that we can re-record the interview that I lost. So, I'm an idiot. So, well, I'm hoping I can get that out done in the next week or two. And then we'll get back to some preparedness topics. We can cover some of that right now. This is just me spitballing off the top of my head. I don't have any notes. I don't have anything prepared. But what I will tell you is the summer growing season is pretty much over. Unless you're in the deep south, in which case you still have about another couple weeks left of good growing. But what you should be doing is seed harvesting. So if you've got a good plant, whether that's, you know, I don't care what variety it is, cucumber, squash, zucchini, eggplant, pumpkin, you know, tomatoes, whatever it is, green peppers, onions, whatever. You need to be harvesting seeds, especially and particularly if those plants were heirloom, non-GMO varieties. You need to be harvesting seeds. Just get them out of the vegetable. What I do is I get them out of the vegetable, and then I put them on paper towels. I don't wash them or anything like that. The tomatoes get kind of tricky because they've got that kind of slime on them. So I have a fine mesh screen that I use to try and get some of that off, and I don't turn the faucet on like full blast or anything. I get enough water to come out of the faucet and get them wet so I can kind of massage the seeds between my thumb and forefinger to kind of get the last of the mucous membrane of sorts off of the tomato seeds. And then I put them on a paper towel and I put them on my counter in a dark recessed corner of the counter. I label each paper towel. So I'll have like, you know, half of a sheet of paper towel, and I'll have, you know, two or three dozen seeds on there, and I'll label it green peppers or zucchini or squash or whatever. And then I bought these Mylar bags, little seed bags. And then I let them dry for 3 days. I check them. I don't want them, you know, I want the moisture out. So once I'm confident and comfortable with how dry they are, I'll put them into these little Mylar bags and seal them up. And then I just stick them. I have like a little blue, I guess it could be Tupperware, but it's more like a seasoning box, if you will, that we bought a long time ago. And it's got a little lid that is attached, and I just start stacking them up in there, and that's what I use every year. Obviously I put the old one, I put the most recent seeds that I've harvested in the back. So I'm constantly pulling from the front. So I'm using the oldest seeds first. And then when I start my plants in the late, winter, early spring, most planting in my location in Ohio, excuse me, I had a burp there. I don't know what that was. We generally don't put anything in the ground until late April at the earliest. I've gone out and was all excited with my potatoes, and I went out there and I put them in the ground, and sure enough, man, we got a hard freeze and we got high winds. I mean, it killed my entire potato crop that I was trying to grow, and I had to replant them all, and that was, I mean, that was, I wouldn't say it was a considerable expense, but I would say it, you know, if that happens enough, you'll start running into some expense, especially if the stuff you're trying to grow isn't common and easily attainable. But anyway, the growing season's over for most of us. So make sure you're harvesting seeds, you're drying them out, and you're storing them. Keep them out of heat, keep them out of light, and you will have viable seeds for the next growing season. Ohio is tricky because I really would like to do some early crops and some late crops. So I've got ideas and designs on a little cold frame that I want to try and implement. So maybe I'll do that in the spring, and that'll give me something to look forward to and do some research on over the as the leaves change and it starts getting colder. I actually saw my breath this morning when I took the dog out. And I thought, oh, come on, man. It was 80 degrees yesterday. But that's it for today's show. This week's show, I should say. So I'll start getting my mind geared up and churning toward winter projects, fall projects, things that I can do in the spring, because when the, you know, with the lack of sunlight, or the reduced amount of sunlight, I should say, at this point, I'm running out of daylight. So, you know, by the time I knock off of work, the wife and the daughter are home. I still have one child at home. And, you know, then it's time, you know, we're going to go make dinner. We're going to, you know, run errands or whatever it is we're going to do. But, you know, when the wife is grading, you know, I'm usually doing research. I'm doing inventory. That's another thing I can tell you about. The first of every month, I have a reminder on my calendar that goes off, and it is a reminder that I need to go and put the chemical treatment in the sewer line, that I need to go in and check my inventory for all of my various storage places, whether that's my chest freezer, whether that's my shelving units, it could be my gear bags. It just, you know, depending on the month or my activity. So, for example, we're coming up on hunting season, and I've got a buddy and his dad coming up from North Carolina, and we're going to go duck hunting. And, you know, I know I'm going to have to start going through gear. And, you know, I'm pretty sure I had it squared away at the end of last season. But you always got to, you know, go double check. And, of course, I've got my get-out-of-dodge bag, my bug-out bag, if you will. So, I, you know, worst-case scenario, I grab that. And it's got my little AR-7 in there, which is the little collapsible survival .22. And it's got 500 rounds of .22 ammunition inside of it. It's not a light bag by any stretch of the imagination. And I have, you know, and I've got 2 weeks' worth of food in there for the family. And I've got the rifle, and I've got water filtration. You know, all kinds of goodies are in that bag. And that's the one bag that I grab on the way out if we have to get up and go. And I think we're getting closer to that tipping point. I honestly do, because the Biden administration has lost its mind. The Democrats have lost their mind. They've lost it a long time ago. And they are pushing us closer and closer to the precipice. The country's going to be out of money on the first. And they seem hell-bent to spend us into oblivion. And I'm reminded of the book The Patriots, or Patriots, by James Wesley Rawls, and basically he wrote that the country collapsed because of their wanton spending. And I'm waiting for somebody in a position of authority in the finance industry to start screaming, saying, "Hey, look, man, the U.S. is about to default." And if anybody ever says that, for example, in the book, I think it was somebody from Deutsche Bank, is the character that James Wesley Rawls used, I think. I mean, the guy only was in there for, you know, three lines of the book, but that's what started his story, was an economic collapse. So, You know, keep your eyes on Washington. Keep your. I just, you know, I don't even know what to say. I mean, we just have to constantly be keeping an eye on Washington because, you know, personally, this country cannot keep spending money. It really can't. So, something's going to happen. And either they're going to spend us into debt for generations, continued, adding a newer two generation, or they're gonna figure something out that makes fiscal sense. And right now, they're not capable of making that decision. So it's a mess. But next week, I promise I'll keep the the Biden jackassery minute to a little bit shorter, so we can spend some more time going over preparedness topics and the like for, you know, the end of the growing season, going into a new season. What can you do? You can do late crops. You can start planning for early crops, whatever, cold frames, like I said before. So that's my goal moving forward. Provided, well, you know, we're going to talk about some sort of debt ceiling because that's coming by at the end of the week. So by the time this episode actually comes out, something should have happened, but we'll see what happens. And we'll definitely talk about that, but we're not going to go and rant and rave for 40 minutes or a whole episode. So, all right, guys, you guys have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Happy Hunger Games, and may the odds be ever in your favor.